another edition of the Leading Hearts Instant Writers podcast. And I have the pleasure of having one of my great friends on the phone, Kenda Wilson. And she's an author, a speaker, and probably one of the most creative people I know. She has a new book out called The Echo Factor. Hey, Kenda, welcome to the program.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. That was quite an intro. I'm honored to be here.
I could play some music or something and add in some, you know, trumpets.
That's great. Amber told me I could be as real as I wanted to be here, so I'm excited and a little scared about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Now, this new book that you have, it's your second book, but The Echo Factor, definitely a very unique read. Tell me about the inspiration behind this book.
Okay, well, when people ask this one, this is a little hard for me to explain because I don't remember where the idea actually started. I just sort of remember being in the middle of an idea, if you've ever had that kind of feeling with me. So I don't remember. It's kind of like a bunch of things I kept stumbling across. I remember reading this neuroscience article about echoes in the brain. And for some reason, I kid you not, everywhere I looked that day, the concept of echoes kept coming up. And I know you tend to notice things more when you're thinking about them, but I promise you, it was weird. People were coming up to me being like, how do you like my echo shoes? Look at this echo. It was so weird. And this whole concept started forming of, I started noticing all these different ways that echoes are kind of woven into our lives. Mm-hmm. And this idea started forming, what if I took that concept and slowly, subtly wove it throughout this kind of science research journal or this adventure story, but yet made it a nonfiction book to talk about things that we deal with, like overcoming fears and being a voice, speaking our own true voice and being an influence. You know, what would that look like? I'm always looking for different ways, like a different spin on the same topic that you've heard before, I guess.
Yeah, actually, when you read the book, there is so much in there, so many journal notes, so much going back and forth in time and space. How did you come up with a rhyme and reason and a sequence for this? Because this must have taken a lot of research, review, writing time over
tons of research. I can't even tell you, because when you're dealing with science, I feel this kind of overwhelming pressure. Because I was trying to take concepts like, you know, the way our brain cells learn things and they wire together, but simplify it down. So that means I would have to read, you know, hundreds of pages of research to not screw up one paragraph. It was a lot of research, and I wish you could. There's a picture somewhere, Amber, of just an entire wall covered with sticky notes
and me
moving them all around in different areas. Because it's not a linear book. I tried to make this like a start in 19, whenever I was born. I'm not saying that number. And keep going. And it didn't work because I don't think our brains work that way. No. I don't think we learn point A now and then learn point B tomorrow. We kind of, especially the creatives, we kind of piece things together from different places to learn them.
Yes.
So this book will talk about one science fact and then like one crazy story about hiking overseas, and it kind of ties them in together to where by the end you've learned about overcoming fear. And that was a lot of sticky notes and a lot of maybe slightly obsessive rearranging.
And I love how you insert random handwritten notes in the borders and around the pages, and you even draw little designs and doodle on those pages. I mean, that in itself, just creating one page and knowing where to put the doodles, that seems very out of the box. And probably this book would be a hard read for someone who is very linear thinking, because it's definitely not. And that's what the beautiful thing of it is. Kenda, what did you learn from the process of writing this book, from your last book, Confessions of a Non-Barbie, to this time?
Honestly, I went into the process maybe a bit too self-confident in what I knew about just the whole process of design or writing or publishing. And this one kind of threw me for a loop because it was a whole different world working in the graphics. And I know people out there who haven't seen it, the book has 10 inserts throughout the book. And then we did it was a hardcover design with an embossed paper on the outside of the hardcover. And then it comes in a box with all these inserts through it. Like the creative idea of it, I was like, oh, we're going to do this design and put these inserts in it. But then walking it out, what I learned about trying to coordinate all that and make it look cohesive and then get the print quality from, you know, I'm printing them cross country on this one. There wasn't anybody local. So trying to figure out how in the world do we keep everybody on the same page on this project and also have it looking cohesive and high quality when it comes out. It was, I may have had a few anxiety moments in this. They were just overwhelming, honestly.
Yeah.
I think I learned, if I were to go back and do this again, knowing what I know now, I would set up a better process working with everyone on the team. And I feel like I could organize everything a lot better and have that process go a lot more smoothly mm-hmm. and communicate better with everyone.
So with this book, you needed a team. You kind of needed that behind you, whereas the first book probably wasn't as extensive as of a team. Did you focus jobs on here, you guys, you do these kinds of inserts and you do this design, or were you pretty hands-on on what things looked like?
Okay, so I did almost all, if not all, of the inserts. Uh-huh. They were things that I could kind of do with my limited graphic design knowledge. And then I had a designer do the box and cover. That was way beyond my skill set, and I knew I needed to pay for that. And then I had a person doing layout. But I think what would happen was, when you're dealing with a project like this with so many pieces, mm-hmm. and it takes so many hours to put in the handwritten notes, we would have one person they would get started on the project and then pass it off to the next person, and they would kind of redo some of the same stuff. And then the next person would have to redo that stuff. So we ended up duplicating. It kind of became a little bit of a mess through part of it, just because I was walking into it, honestly, completely unclear of what the project would entail, because there was no way to know. Some things you can't Google. Mm. And this was one of those things. We had no idea, like putting in the handwritten notes, is that going to take 3 hours or is it going to take 30 hours? Mm-hmm. Turns out it was like 30.
Wow.
So when we got in the middle of the process, it was just things I couldn't know to begin with. So we would pass it from one person to the next and then back, and we got a lot of duplication and stuff just having to be redone. And I wish there were some manual out there for how to do some of these things, and there wasn't.
The thing about being a creative is sometimes you go out on a limb and you manufacture something that hasn't been done before. Maybe you see a little pieces of work that's out there that you like and you incorporate, but at the end of the day, it is trial and error. And I think I hear from what you're saying that this effort, which was definitely very creative and very out of the box of what I've seen in the publishing world, this trend, you're a trendsetter.
Oh, I've never been cool before. It happened.
That maybe it would be for some others, this kind of a process and this kind of a style would be hard to replicate, but then people will see, ooh, this is a great idea, and try to knock off Miss Kinda Wilson. But you've heard it first here on the Leading Hearts Instant Writers podcast. Kinda did it first.
You're awesome. Oh my goodness. How about get too technical with all that stuff? But if, I mean, the graphic designers out there, people who work in the print world will know and geek out, like trying to match all those colors with the formulas. And when that book arrived, the book arrived, they overnight you one copy, and you know, like a pallet of books is coming right behind it. Mm-hmm. And I sat there holding it in my lap, being like, will this be great? Will it be terrible? I have no way of knowing. And it was just this moment of pure terror.
Because a lot of people feel that way. And as a professional writer, you kind of get to those moments where you're like, is this going to work? And you just jump. Now, the book releasing, did you have a release date on that?
It released December 4th.
It released in December. Now, you have a background in book marketing. You've worked a lot with bookstores and art marketing, actually, teaching on a college level. Tell me a little bit about the industry of books and how maybe it's changed from the past few years that you've been involved in that.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to me to talk about this, because even though it's changing so much, there's still so many unknowns in book marketing, so many things that change from genre to genre. One of my very good friends writes books and sells $2.99 ebooks, and in the romance genre. Mm-hmm. And it's a completely different world from mine, who's selling a book, you know, like at a $20 price point, and she's selling it $3. Mm-hmm. I think what I've seen is that whatever industry, whatever genre, whatever niche market you're in, you have to research that market and figure out the buying behavior and buying process in that specific market. Because our two worlds, even though we both sell books, my friend Stacy and I, we could be, I mean, one could be selling dump trucks and the other could be selling clocks. It's that different for how we market. So she's targeting bloggers, and there's just not the same world and the same buying pattern and impulse buying behavior than I have. So I would say, first of all, it's just to do the research within whichever market you're in and figure out the buying behavior there.
I know a lot of people are into the let's publish this book as quick and easy as possible and get it up there. What are some of the warnings you would give to those who are doing this?
Well, I should qualify this by saying I'm huge about saving money wherever I can, bootstrapping things, you know, not spending money if I don't have to. So I am not one of those extravagant spenders. But on the other hand, you have to realize that the book that you create as product, it's going to be around. People will see it forever. And it is essentially representing you, your brand. And so save money where you can. But I always, and I did this as well, as much as it hurt me. I spent money on, at the very least, a copy editor to read through something at the very end, at the very least, a copy editor, and pay money for, if you're not a specific graphic designer, and even then, I would pay someone to design the cover. Because those two, and maybe you can save money on some of the other things if you want, but those two places, I am pretty OCD about grammar and editing, but I hired someone, and she ripped it apart in a good way, and I'm so thankful. Those are two places that you don't want something out there representing you for the next 20 or 30 years that has a major typo on the cover.
A big typo.
You can help it.
Yeah, because I know what it's like to produce a magazine and have a printed copy with a big typo on the cover and not be able to take that back. And you know what? Magazines have a lower shelf life than a book. So you don't want any typos that will represent you for the rest of your life. It's a blessing, the digital publishing industry, because sometimes you can take it back real fast. But somebody sees that anyway. What would be your final word of encouragement for somebody who's just starting out in the publishing industry who wants to establish a platform and be able to use their book to launch them in what they're called to do in speaking?
Oh, their own platform?
Yes.
Okay, I kind of, this is kind of maybe a little different direction here, but I kind of look at the book, instead of pushing it forward, is instead of me looking at the book being like, this is the only thing I have, or please buy the book, I kind of look at it more as a tool for my platform to support what I'm doing. And so I actually have work the book into where it's a piece of what you're doing instead of it pushing it forward as the only thing, and have it represent you as a brand. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
So if you're speaking in marketing, like I teach marketing classes, I'm creating a marketing book so that I can, the book actually becomes sort of a business card and will open some doors for you to be able to speak more. And then when you speak, you will have the book there to sell as well. So it kind of, I'm saying you can use the book as a leverage almost in different situations if you're wanting to go that route as far as building a platform with speaking.
I love that. It is really true. Your book is your business card, and what you're doing, your ministry, the book is just an accessory to that. That's the reason why a lot of those who are just starting out in the publishing industry maybe get some missional ideas of, okay, what are you doing? What's the purpose behind it? Sometimes writing is to have fun. Sometimes it's aligned with your mission. I always joke, I love writing poems. I would love to write song lyrics. I doubt one day everybody has that poetry anthology that hopefully one day might be published or might be burned. But it's good to have that free writing, but really kind of focus in on, if you want to establish a ministry platform, okay, what books align with, or what projects would align with what you're trying to accomplish? Because it doesn't do any good to do a million creative things if none align or propel you towards your ultimate purpose and goal. It's exciting to hear you, Kenda, and to be able to talk with you again. And we're excited. Echo Factor, tell us that website, Kenda.
You can go to theechofactor.com and it will take you to tell you about the book and my website. So theechofactor.com.
Theechofactor.com. And you can check out Kenda's excerpt from that book in the new issue of Leading Hearts Magazine, March issue. And we're excited to have her as part of that. And you can check out that, leadinghearts.com. And until next time, this is Amber.